they need you.
All right, if you want to sit down and settle yourselves. Has everyone filled out a registration form for the drawing for the door prizes and to let us know that you were here? Has anybody not done it? Chance, you want to come up here and grab one? If you have filled it out and haven't put it anywhere, if it's still in your hand, put it in this room. Anybody else? Do that quickly. I'm going to count to 10. Let's go over prizes and show what we've got. I'll start with these and then you'll talk about yours since you know yours better. We've got...
Don't know how that happened, Dan. Oh, here's another.
So we've got a bunch of CDs, courtesy of Starbucks Here Music. We've got a Meyer Sound cap, courtesy of Meyer Sound. We have a T-shirt, Shure SM57 T-shirt. Yeah. Courtesy of Dr. Mike.
Opus 4.
And then courtesy of Stage Research, we have Stage Research, am I on? Stage Research T-shirt, which is famous as technical theater, less actors, more beer. we have three of those. And we have some templates here. We have three templates. These are actually speaker templates. So these have outlines, vertical and horizontal, for Meyer products and I believe EAW products and a number of different speakers and a little angle finder, kind of a cool thing that Stage Research does. And then I guess what would be our grand prize is...
Before you do that, we got one more prize.
Oh.
Before the grand prize.
Ah, before the...
And that's a Meyer Sound bag, courtesy of Meyer Sound.
Okay. This is a copy of software called ShowBuilder. It's from Stage Research. It's not the software that's running up there. This software is actually it's a $295 product. I was amazed that they sent this as a gift and very pleased that they did. It does paperwork for you. It does sound design and sound installation paperwork. It contains a library of over 350 different pieces of equipment. You work in it list the equipment that you're using. It'll do truck packs. It'll do all kinds of things like that for sound equipment. The bad news is it's PC only if you're a Mac person. But you know, there's parallels. Come on, there's boot camp. There's all those things.
Okay. So. Do I start with T-shirts? Maybe?
Okay. Shall we start with the? This is a this is courtesy of Opus 4. Is that right?
It's from Opus 4 Studios.
From Opus 4 Studios. This is not the kind of mic that he uses, by the way. Pardon me?
I believe that's that 57 or 58.
57.
57.
SM57.
The studio, I believe, has four.
It says established 1965. Sure. It's the Stage Research ones that have it.
Are we going to have committee members eligible?
Yes.
Okay, so committee members are eligible. We almost, for a while there, we had one prize per person here. Now we don't quite have that. So go ahead.
Tom
Stiles! Oh! Yeah. There you go. Congratulations. Okay, so a Stage Research Technical Theater, less actors, more beer, T-shirt. This particular one is an extra large.
Jamie,
huh? Now you have to be careful when you wear this when you walk into the theater. So. Okay, we have yet another Stage Research. This size? Funny you should ask. This is an adult large. Okay. Would you, and you, actually, I've got a couple of larges and a couple of extra larges, so you can choose which you prefer. Okay. Is that an extra large? Did I lie? Oop, that's an adult large. Let me,
Here, I've got an extra large.
Here you go. No, we've got an extra large. Would you like to swap for a large? Okay. Okay, so now I have a large. Yeah, there you go. And I don't think you need an extra large. Yes, let's keep the other three of those, and then we'll give this stuff. So, you want to do? Let's do a couple of CDs, and then we'll do some templates.
Everyone is going to be a winner. So I've lined up the CDs here and the hat, and you can, when you come up, you can pick whichever one you want. And the choices are, these are all Starbucks Hear Music. Well, the low stars are Starbucks Hear Music debut artist. This is the new Norah Jones album. There's a Chet Baker Too Cool album, which is really cool. The Doors Scattered Sun and the Dreamgirls soundtrack. Yes, music from the motion picture. And our first winner is...
you.
Oh!
Kick me out, I've already got one. Somebody else.
Tiberius.
All right. Congratulations. Gary is very conscious of noting who gets what. So when you get your thing, hold it up so Gary can see it. So he got yours, Gary. Sorry, Chet Baker. That's a really cool CD.
Mac Perkins.
Yay.
All right. This is so revealing.
Draw another name in. Put some pressure on this guy. Norah Jones, that's a cool one. Too.
Jim?
When you see that guy, you tell him, what a bummer.
What an opportunity he missed. Ah!
Okay. Doors.
Well, the choices are getting slimmer.
Yes. Low stars.
This will be the real test. Will they take the CD or will they take the hat?
All right.
Oh. Okay, so now for templates, for a template, your opportunity to draw the speaker of your choice.
Sean Murphy? All right. This is something you can use.
Okay. Two more.
Can I do the
drawing? Huh. There you go. You bet. This stage research has had a batch of them made up for this kind of thing. It's an angle. It's a protractor, not done out in angles. Okay, so are we at the moment of truth? Oh, the bag. But the bag's got. It's going to be delayed gratification.
It is not.
And Rick was left holding the bag. Okay, for the show builder software.
Yeah. That's why we don't
Mike Pateski. There you go. And you now you need a PC to run it on that. Well, Parallels is only $79. You want to? You sure? Okay. I mean, you're. Well, it runs on Parallels. You can run Parallels on an Intel Mac. Yeah, gosh. It is. Thank you. Okay.
So now the next prize donated by Open Source Media
is a copy of Show Builder, which runs on a platform not to be mentioned. Paul? All right. Okay, so does that means I'm on again?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I wanted to say also in that Meyer package there was a full Meyer catalog that I didn't want to give as a door prize, but if you want to talk to me afterwards.
Well, let's see, where's that here's that mic. Just for grins here for a minute, why don't you is this still on? You did. Okay, so I mentioned about effects. Let's see if this works. I found this highly expensive piece of effects equipment. And I don't know how well this will work in this environment, but where are we coming from? Are we seeing? Person, I also can't hear what's coming on here. But as you move, you know, this is not also the crispest plastic. But when I do it like this, it's obviously plastic bag that's being maneuvered. But when you come in and do, and again, it's hard for me to do this because I can't hear it. Maybe I'll take this out where I can hear it. And where you can't hear it. So that kind of gives us that crackle of fire, and again, when you're working in a more confined atmosphere, or confined room where it's quiet, and you can build some subtlety into that motion, you can use all kinds of things like that to create sound effects. So there's another stupid designer trick. I do want to show you one that's maybe not quite so stupid. And just to give you a quick sense of some of the stuff that's out there that you can use to work as a designer, this piece of software that I'm running here, which again I'm sorry to tell you is PC only, is called Lara, which is I'm going to have to go to the help file to remember what that Lara stands for, and doggone it. If they don't tell you in the Lara is a speaker modeling, an inexpensive speaker modeling software. The pro version of this, pro quote unquote version of this, is about $295. They have a demo version that's a little bit less. Basically, I have modeled this room in this. You can see the peaked roof here. You can see the balcony here. As I highlight it, you see the color changes on that little surface. The little sticks that you see out are the normals to the surface. It tells me which surface this thing sees as a reflective or as an absorbing or a reflecting surface. Reflecting is a bit of a misnomer because this software is much less expensive than Ease, which is the really professional software that's used to do this kind of speaker modeling. This one doesn't do reflections at all. And so I'm going to turn off those normals because they're annoying if you're not actually needing to use them. So what does this do? Well, I have here these two speakers at a roughly very quick and dirty setting of the angle that I have them on. I've used Ease data for those speakers, and this program will take that Ease data and convert it into data that this program can use. And as I go over here, I'll just do a quick. I'm going to click this button, and what this does is at, in this case, it's set at 3 feet off the floor. It's giving me the level that I would expect from those speakers at 2 kilohertz around various places in the room. And you can see here the 118 dB is the high, 98 dB is the low, and this gives me a kind of rough idea of how these speakers are covering the room. Now, this is not with complex interaction. If I click this complex summation, this looks considerably less happy, as you would expect it to. But it does show me, I use this tool mainly to show students, first of all, that there is no such thing as a free lunch in terms of putting two speakers together. And secondly, without the complex summation in, when I do use it with the complex summation to help them figure out ways to change and manipulate the angle of the speakers to reduce that as much as possible. But mainly we use it so that they can get an idea of how that coverage is going for each speaker. And we can put multiple speakers into this space. So if I wanted to add another speaker, I can go into here and let's see if I'm lucky on this one. And let's say I want to put a, I don't know that I would want to do that. Let's see. Well, here, these little Control 5s, which are really hideous pattern speakers, but they work really well for theater effects, even though on paper they don't look very good. I'm going to take this speaker, and if I move this little box out of the way, this speaker has now appeared. No, it hasn't. In a minute, this speaker will have appeared. I had too many windows in front of me here on a little screen. So now I'm going to add that Control 5. I'm going to put it at a specific location. In this case, I'm just going to put it on the deck at 10 feet. I shouldn't put it on the deck. I'll put it at 8 feet high, at 0, and then at 8 feet, at 6 feet. Okay, so this little speaker has appeared here. And now, if I click this thing again, there's its ugly little pattern in the middle of this. In the middle, this is its little contribution at 2K. If I'm using it with these speakers over here, it'll get really ugly if I do this. But what would be more interesting, probably, if I was trying to figure out whether that speaker would work for me for a, this is loudspeaker 3. So I'm going to do just the pattern from that speaker. And that gives me an idea of what kind of level I can expect. I mean, this is really square law, basically. But it gives me an idea of what kind of level I can expect around the sides and sort of that. So it's a quick and dirty program that can be used in a much more sophisticated way than I'm using it. The downside is this program, again, is less expensive than these. I can't import DXF files into this. I have to build this geometry point by point and then convert those points to surfaces. So there's quite a bit of time involved in building a relatively simple model.
So the color representation of
level, in this case of level, yeah. Of SPL, essentially from that thing at 2K hertz. I can go down to 630 hertz, and it'll tell me what to expect at that from this with a maximum of 118 and a range of 20 dB. So the gray here tells me that I'm below the 20 dB. If it was black, you see a couple little spots there in the middle where it's black. That tells me that I'm over that level right there, over that 118 dB. High point right there. Again, I find this most useful for helping students figure out what to expect when they're putting speakers in. And in more complex settings where I've got multiple speakers and I might be using front fills or things like that, help them figure out where the front fills might balance with the mains and so on. I would prefer to use the more expensive product, but it's more expensive. So, yeah. No, there's no reflection on this. However, what I can do with this, let me go back to, let's take one of those, one of those Meyer speakers up there, for example. So this shows me this thing at this level. I can tell it, I really wonder what that speaker is doing on this wall over here. So I'm going to select that wall, and then I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to say selected surfaces only. And now, it'll show me what the sound is, what I can expect to see on that wall. I can add in that surface as well. And as long as I still do that, I think it will show me yes. So now that shows me what I expect to hit that ceiling and what I expect to hit that wall. And I know if I look at that, if I see anything in that orange or red zone or really into the yellow, I can expect to get some serious reflections off of that wall, and I have to be careful about that. So I can use this to aim my speakers in a way that gets my reflections off the walls. It's not as handy as Ease, because with Ease you can get a complex picture with the reflections off the wall. I also use Map Online, Meyer's Map Online, for working with the Meyer speakers. The frustration that I have with Map Online is that it's one dimension, it's two dimension only. So in a perfectly rectangular room, that works fine, and it will show me reflections off the wall. But in this room, I've got that big balcony that sticks out and does that business over there. And when I often will have these speakers in an orientation like this, or sometimes over there like that, the Map Online will show me only the reflection off the outside wall. So I can't get it to show me the reflection off the balcony and that wall there, at least in its current incarnation. And I'm sure probably it will have that ability to add geometry later. I can show a picture of the geometry in there, but I can't really see what it's doing in terms of reflection. So I use both of them together. I'll use the Map Online to get because I trust its, I trust what it knows about Meyer speakers better than I trust the Ease data that they've published. Because Meyer on their website even says that this Ease data is not necessarily, they don't believe it's necessarily accurate. And then I'll do two drawings. I'll do a section and a ground plan, and look at it and try and figure out where it's helpful for me is like with the subwoofer and realizing where my standing waves are in the room and things like that. Yes, Paul. Pardon me? Yeah, it will. Depending on how I orient the normal. Let me turn that back on. It'll also do shadowing. And that's pretty useful. Let me include this surface, and actually let me real quickly just deselect all surfaces. And then I'll select just the balcony surface, and I can get my hands on it here. Well, I don't think it'll show me anything on the under balcony surface there. So now I've selected this surface and that surface under the balcony. And now if I do this, obviously it's showing me the shadowing there. And according to it, basically from the view I'm in right now, this wall back here is completely shadowed by the balcony. That's probably not completely accurate, certainly not because we'll have reflections off the floor. But I can go into another, if I go into, maybe I go into YZ view like that and then go again and I'll see if there's any. Am I looking at it from the wrong side? No, I'm only showing one speaker right now. Oh, is it? Let me look at XY.
You can't put in anything like a sort of material where you've got any room on the wall.
Say again? Oh, no. No, because again...
But it's considering every surface to be a non-porous surface, okay?
Well, yeah. In fact, it's not thinking about the surface at all. All it's showing you is whatever surface that wall is, this is what's going to be on it. And then you have to know, okay, that's an absorbent wall, I'm not going to worry about that. Or that's a reflective wall, yeah, I got to worry about that. That's why it's cheap. That's why it's cheaper. I just wanted to see real quick that's curious. Let's go back to ISO. Oh, that's, of course, because I cleverly selected only those surfaces. So if I take selected surfaces out, now it'll show me. I just wanted to see if you're right. Yes, you're right. We're looking at the speaker. It appears. No, we're looking at the speaker that's going this way, I think. No, you're right. We are. Hang on. Let's try that. Yeah, there you go. That's the speaker on that side. You're right. Good catch. So now if I go over here and do selected surfaces only, You're right. Now it shows me that. It shows me some color under there. And if I go to that YZ view again and go, we'll see. So now I know I'm going to get reflections off of that little part of the balcony there that may be edging up into that 111 dB range, and I'm going to get some under there. But I'm not going to see. I'm not really going to. It's not that useful for that kind of detail. This is where ease would be much more useful. Oh, I have it turned off. There it is with shadowing. It also seems to think that the swell only goes up this high. So as I'm seeing a little bit of mystery sound up there from from. Yeah, you can do all kinds of things. Now I don't know ease very, very well myself, other than just seeing demos. I haven't actually used it, but you can put in fairly detailed 3D AutoCAD import of the geometry of the room, and then you can define all that geometry in terms of what kind of reflective coefficient it has and sort of. So if you modeled that, you could put it in there and you could see it.
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah. But it would be a tedious model to build. Yeah. Of the model, right. Right.
Many times for a space like this, you wouldn't need to enter into too great detail with modeling that way. You could just enter the subsurface and define parameters such as absorption, scattering coefficient, which would be depending on the model, the number of perforations, and the size of the model.
Right. Yeah, for a room like this, I think that's one of the reasons this is useful for a room like this, because really, you can walk out into the room and hear what it's doing. And one of the things I do with the students is we'll model the room with speakers in a given configuration. Then we come down here and put it in that configuration and say, okay, now let's listen to what we hear here. Can you see what we're seeing here? And what they learn is that, yeah, you can see some of it, but no, you can't see some of it. And one of the things they learn is that they get really frightened when they see when I'm showing them this, and it's, I'm sure. That an ease model will give you the same kind of the same kind of shock if you're not really thinking about it. But if I go all loudspeakers, actually, yeah, that's going to show this little one too. But I'm going to leave that complex summation on. Oh shoot. Okay. See, nobody caught me. I was testing you guys. Deselect all surfaces. Okay. Now go.
Select the surface around.
Ha. You're good. Okay. You're earning that big fee that we've... Okay, so they see this, and of course this one is including that little control 5 in there, but they see this and they think, oh my God, you can't this can't possibly work. This is horrible. And then you have to remind them that very few people pay to come to listen to a 2K Hertz tone played, or walk around the room and care that much that it's that different around the room. But it does help them to see, for instance, if their first thought is to space these two speakers 10 feet apart on either side of this opening, to understand that as long as they're playing stereo material that's going to vary between the speakers, that's fine. But if they're playing something mono, they can expect to get some patterns at various different frequencies. And it also helps them to see, you know, that it's different. This is 630 hertz. I go up to, you know, to 8K hertz and do the same thing, and it's a completely different pattern. It helps them to understand, I think, a little bit better what they're inflicting on their audience when they design their speaker plan. I had a lighting design. Frederick Bentham was a famous lighting designer from England. Once, in one of his books, goes on about he's talking about color, selection of color. And my favorite line in this whole book is, you know, it would be well for the lighting designer to remember that a minimum of 10% of the adult male audience is colorblind. You know, and he should have himself checked to be sure he's not one of them before inflicting his color choices on an audience. And of course, he did use he. That was before we were more sensitive about those things. But it is true. This is another one of the areas where as with hearing loss, where the odds, one of those few areas where the odds are stacked against us guys instead of the gals, because there are more male colorblind individuals than female. So, okay, so let's see. So anyway, that's a tool that I thought you might be interested in seeing, which is the other side of this business, that a sound designer has to know a little bit about systems design at the very least, and understand again what it is that they're doing with the system, because they're going to be responsible for putting that up. Let's see if we can look at a couple of things in here. Does anybody have any questions first off about the SFX software? Is anything that you want to see? I can think of one thing. Let me show you. go ahead. Okay, good, because that's just what I thought I might do. Is you're brilliant. Think of that. Let's go to these are pretty simple. So let's look at these first. So go to that first one, the Cal Worthington bull roar, and right click on it. All right. So now click on the mixer tab. So this is what we have in this software. So I have now it's a little confusing because you have to think in terms of groups, and that's because right now, in this version, the software is running on DirectX. That's how it's making its assignment of sound. The next version, SFX6, will move to ASIO, which opens us up to a whole new generation of different sound cards and eliminates part of that problem. So it thinks of each one of these groups. So it's group 1 through 8, left and right, is the way it thinks about this assignment. So as you can see here, we've assigned this cue to play out of group 5, right-hand side. Now, I just translate that in my outputs from the Layla to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, output 10, which in this case is an analog output. That would be my number 2 analog output. Because I have this patched, and this is something I can adjust, so that groups 1 through 4 are my 8 ADAT outputs from my Layla sound card. And my groups 5 through 8 are my 8 analog outputs from my Layla. I do that because the way that I patch the system in, I run an ADAT cable, light pipe cable, from the Layla sound card into the ADAT inputs on the Yamaha, which gives me 8 digital inputs, and then I use the analog outputs into analog inputs on the computer, so I can get a total of 16 distinct channels out of the computer into the mixer. I like to use the digital ones first because then I get to use Yamaha's converters, which are nicer than the Echo converters, in my opinion. They sound better. So that's the way I tend to route. So for this one, we've assigned it to 5. So let's tell you what. Why don't you click on the wave button in the dialog effects properties right under effect. And hit the play button. Okay. So that came from here? Back there. Someplace. Okay. Okay. I couldn't remember which one that was. Let's take that and pull that down and pull up number 2 on group 6. And now hit the play button again. Did it come from the same place? Okay. This is one of the things I hate about some of this software sometimes. Hit OK. Now open it up again and hit play. And wave. They're fixing that in the next version. There we go. Okay. It didn't take the change that I did in that instant moment. It would actually have taken it if I had done it while it was playing, but this cue is too short to be able to actually make the manipulation. So this is essentially my matrix out. And I can assign it different levels. If I want that cue to come out of there, and let's put we've got bring 4 up to about 15. Actually, bring it up to about 6. That may be excessive, but that's the way it goes. Let's bring 5 right up to about 20 maybe. Okay. And say okay, and then just play that cue. You have to yeah. Okay. Well, that one doesn't have much bottom end in it. I put the subwoofer in, which was number 4. So that wasn't the cue to do that that test with. But let's pardon me? In this version, you know, I don't think you can. I've never bothered because I've just gotten used to the format, and I know to think in terms of my outputs as being by groups. In fact, what I'll often do is label the mixer so that I've got that labeled as groups in and out. I can label the Layla cards inputs and outputs so that it'll show up on its application. And it usually will communicate to something else that it's connected to. But the new version, you can label the thing. And in the new version, this whole interface changes. I'm not going to try to show you the new version tonight because it takes a while to start it up. It's in early beta right now. And there's only about 12 of us that are beta testing it right now. But it goes to a completely different, it uses ASIO inputs and outputs. It has an input matrix and an output matrix. And basically, it works like a matrix. It's a cross-point matrix, so you can assign different effects and delay to each cross-point of input to output, and you can do all kinds of complex routing with it. And you can use it to control input signals as well. So you can run a mic through it, for example, and use it to control a mic. It's one of the standards of operation of sound cards, and I can't remember. I think it's
audio
is it?
System input output.
Yeah. Okay. Audio system input. And is it Steinberg? Was that the? Yeah. Steinberg was the, I think, where it first came along. It's becoming a pretty much de facto standard for interconnection of computer sound cards. So all of the cards out there, you know, like the RME and all the Motu and just about any of the manufacturers will have ASIO drivers now, but since the landscapes keep shifting with Windows, JJ's not here, so I can say that DirectX has been both a blessing and the bane of our existence. Earlier, when DirectX was only did 16-bit files. It affected the coarseness of the fades we could do in this, and when we would come down to very low level, we often had a lot of noise at the bottom. Since moving on to XP and the newer DirectX engines allowed 32-bit resolution, and that's improved the fades considerably, even if you're using 16-bit files. So the fades are much, much cleaner now. Let's go to click out of that. Of course, we've changed it, but you know, I don't think I'll have to do this show again. So let's go look at Big Guy down there and just open that one so we can see. Now, so on that one, that's why it sounded like it was coming from everywhere, because basically I've got the kitchen sink in that one. So I've just brought up levels all the way around the room on all the speakers, and then I click OK on that guy. And then the second one, Big Guy 2, and there I've boosted a couple of them in there a little bit too. Now let's look at something else. Click OK on that. In between those two is something called a wait. Click on that wait. This just gives me a delay time, and the waits start when the cue starts. So when the previous cue starts, that's when the clock starts. So I have to remember if my previous cue is a fade that lasts for 10 seconds, and I don't want the next fade to start until after that fade has stopped, I need to start at 10 seconds on that fade. There is an auto follow as well, which I can use. But auto follow is tricky because auto follow will follow the end of the wave file. And often when I'm building a show, I'll have one piece of audio that's going to play for, you know, 5 minutes, but I'm going to do 30 or 40 different variations on it through the thing. So I work with these waits primarily. And I think about where to place them. Now, there's another way I can do that with this version. This version of which I do rarely, so I'm not going to try to demo it. But this version supports timecode as well. And so what I can do is I can start the timecode clock. So I can have a cue that will start my timecode clock. and then I can put each portion or each fade that I want to have, or each fade that I want to have happen at a specific time code relative to the starting of that time code clock. And then I can have a cue that stops the time code clock and resets it. So when I go, it'll fire the time code, and then all those cues will happen. And then if I want to shift them around in time, all I have to do is adjust their time code. The catch-22 is that if I have three different cue lists built, and all of them have time code cues, and I'm not careful about where I set the time code, I might suddenly find myself firing one cue, and something on another cue sheet over here fires because I forgot that it was fired at the same time in the time code. So, and then the other problem with time code in live theater is that we haven't yet had all the actors fitted with their MIDI sockets and linear time code sockets, and they persist in operating at their own time code. So it does. Well, jitter is a whole other thing, but so anyway, I have the weights that go in between there, and then you can see that actually there's an auto follow. Let's look at this pistol fire sequence. This one was tricky, a little bit tricky. It's not really anything interesting to look at in an autofollow cue. The pistol cock happens, then the pistol fire is an autofollow. But then I've used timings here, and for each one of these things, it's waiting 8/10 of a second, firing this cue, which appears to be 1 second, waits 4/10 of a second, fires the next cue, and so on and so forth. Because I'm trying to get that timing to happen so that the second cue, the subsequent cue will happen at the right place relative to the first cue. So why don't you play that sequence again? Because that was fun. I like that sequence a lot. Oops, no, the space bar is locked to that one. So especially the end.
Can you have one sound that play a clip that plays to the background while you have other clips?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole point, really, of this software. So if I go, let's do this. Let's go down to slide down to, let's slide down more. Okay, play the environment mix. Now this one, this is an interesting one in that I have multiple. And I'll show you this in a second. I have multiple wave files playing, starting when I play that, and they're all going to different places in the room, and they're all playing at the same time. So it allows me to have rain coming out of the back speakers and sea wash coming out of these speakers. And from time to time, you'll hear birds and other things coming out of other speakers, but it's all one cue. Click on the wave button. And it's hard to see because I've got such a complicated folder structure. But you can see that top one group there is I've got environment one, emix one wave. So that's basically a mix down of one track in an audio editor that I built this in. Now I built this particular sequence is probably about 25 stereo tracks in this audio editor, mixed down to mixed down to eight, but the truth is we're not hearing all eight of them because I don't have 16 speakers in the room. And I've got a different one on each one. So click on that next one down and use your right there you go, emix 2, and the same thing on the next one, rain and cold wind, emix 4, so on and so forth. So there's a different sound file, a different audio file being sent to each group in SFX. And then I can go over to the mixer tab, and I can control the relative level of each one of those sound files. But the advantage is, and the reason they went to doing this, is all of those files will start instantaneously at the same time. Now, if I do it with weights, I can do this. I can build that same structure by having several different cues or eight different cues with weight zeros between them. And a weight zero just fires the second cue the same time the first cue fires. But it doesn't really, because the instructions in the computer take time. So even with a fast computer, there's a little bit of lag before that second one happens. Now, for most sound effects work, doesn't matter. You know, it's not going to be a problem because you're talking milliseconds at the very most. But if you're doing this, another way you can use this is you could do stems in your editor with your rhythm tracks and your drums and guitar and vocal and so on, and then you could lay all those in on those different tracks and mix them all out to the same place And you could use this to actually mix the song and be able to change your mix level in rehearsal while you're going. Well, if you do that the old way with the weight zeros, not everybody, but some people, certainly trained musicians, often will hear enough of that time cycle difference by the time you get from the first file to the eighth file that they'll start to recognize that some little bit of comb filtering and some little bit of timing difference between those files. So this it basically eliminated that. But anyway, let's see. That one's still going. That's long. So I click with cancel so it'll keep playing. And now I'll go back up while this is playing and fire our... no, let's not do that one. Fire our gunshot again. And it's still there, right? Is it still there? Tell me it's still there. Yeah, it's still playing. It's just gotten quiet at this point, gotten quieter at this point. So, yes, you can have, and this is the big thing. I've been arguing with audio editor companies for years about this, saying, you know, I'd like to use your product to play back into the theater, but here's what I got to do. I've got to be able to play a rain cue in the background, and I've got to modify its level so that it's in the background. It starts off high so the audience hears the rain, and then it drops down to an underscore level so that they're just still aware that it's in the background. And then when so-and-so walks off the stage, I've got to have a dog bark. And then when so-and-so turns on the radio, I've got to have the radio on. But I've got to still hear that rain in the background. And I might have three of those different cues happening, but I've got to be able to instantaneously fire these, not on time code, but when that actor unit does his thing on stage. And that is variable, and that's going to change every night. And I've never been able to get, Traction may be the first one that maybe will do this, but I've never been able to get anybody who writes digital audio editor software to understand that as an issue. Because I think they think in terms of music production and in terms of producing a piece that has a fixed timing in a sense. You know that all the pieces are supposed to come in at the same place. So this is the big thing that SFX came up with, this company, Stage Research. 91, I think we were just talking about this, is when we first saw this our version of this software, considerably less sophisticated than this, but still doing this basic stuff on a PC and allowing us to have just that thing that everybody else told us you can't do. Now, I talked to, confession, I bought version 1 of Pro Tools. Right? What an idiot, right? But I bought version 1 of Pro Tools, and I didn't realize I was buying version 1 of anything or what that meant at the time in like 91 or 90. Something or other, and I talked to those guys. They said, "Well, man, this is what I want to do. I need to be able to do this." Well, we don't know why you'd want to do that. I finally kind of said, "Well, you know, it's my job to know why I want to do that. It's your job to make it possible." So, and that's what these guys did. And these aren't the only ones. There's LCS, which is now owned by Meyer, which has a very sophisticated system. But the LCS system was the only thing out that would do this kind of stuff for a while, and it's hardware, and it was expensive. You know, it was $27,000 to buy an LCS system that would do, I think, 8 tracks at the time. These guys came along and put it on a 286 Windows machine with a couple of $120 sound 4-channel sound cards, and they were doing 8 channels out. So small theaters just jumped on that because now we could afford to start doing stuff with the computer. Software cost, now I buy it on an educational license, so I get a big break on it, but it was $4.95 for the basic version, which only does 8 tracks. I think that its full retail is $6.95, it's $8.95 for the Pro Audio version, which bumps me up to the 16 channels per cue list. And then Show Control Edition is another chunk. I think my price on it is like $1,500 to buy the full version with Show Control. And that's useful because I can, if I want to do a show where this makes sense, I can lock this thing up to a time code that's also running my lighting system and also running video and doing things like that. No, because we have an obsession, an ETC obsession lighting console in this space, and we actually were planning to do that on a show we just finished. We were planning to lock up the, because it was a musical and we had recorded music in the piece, and we wanted to lock up the sound and the light console. And we discovered that the board that we bought had a blanking plate where the MIDI slot, where the MIDI plugs were supposed to go. So we bought our Obsession console used. Not a great name for a lighting console, Obsession, you know. So I haven't tried to do it with lights. I have done it with locking up multiple computers together for playing audio, where I might have a couple of different systems. Actually, another way to do that with the SAW Studio software that I use now as my primary editor. He's got a kind of crazy. It's amazing software. It's amazingly well crafted software. He allows you to run up to 8 instances, and they can all link by TCP/IP. So you can run it across a networked computer. You can have 8 computers with 48 ins and outs on each one. You can run 8 instances of this software, lock them all together. You hit the go on one, it'll go on all of them, and it'll run. So it allows you to do a whole lot of tracks, a lot more than I need to do. but that's another way to skin that particular feline. Actually, you know, that's the one I think I don't think we do. Some of them do. To tell you the truth, I have 7 licenses of SAW Studio here on campus for my students to work with. I also keep Audacity on each machine because it's free, and because I know they can afford to buy their own. But my sound design students, and we're a very small program, you know, I have about 4 sound design students at a time. So my sound design students wind up buying software that works for them. They choose the computer that works for them. I don't tell them they have to have a PC or a Mac. Some of them are on Macs, some are on PCs. So right now I have one who's running a Pro Tools system. I have one who's running, what's the Adobe one? Audition. I've got another one who's, I think, got the basic version of SAW Studio. And there's somebody who just runs Audacity and doesn't bother, but comes in here when they do more complex mix. I will probably, I'll probably bite the bullet and buy Pro Tools again here. I bought Pro Tools, as I said, as version 1, and I stuck with it through about version 3.2, right about the Nubus to PCI transition. And that's where it occurred to me that, you know, my $25,000 Pro Tools system that I bought in 91, running on a blazingly fast Mac 2 CI with 8 channels and a $2,900 1.2 gigabyte drive, which we called 1,200 megabytes back then, to make that transition from 3.2 to 4, I was going to have to buy new Macs, I was going to have to replace all the Pro Tools hardware. It was going to cost me a minimum of $12,500 to replace one machine. And for about $3,000, I was able to buy 4 PCs outfitted with the equipment, you know, with the software that I wanted to go. Now that equation has changed again, and I think nowadays I really tell students, I don't care what kind of computer you use. You know, use a Mac, use a PC, use whatever you're happy with, and we'll work with that. So I even bought a Mac myself, believe it or not. Those who know me know that I've been PC only forever, but we finally broke down and bought a Mac 2 CI or Mac 2 CI. Yeah, I got a really good deal on it. You'd be surprised how cheap those are. An iMac for my wife's machine at home, and the real sneaky part there was that I'm getting her used to that, and then I figure that, you know, maybe next year it'll be time to say, you know, I got to replace my machine. And those quad dual cores look pretty good, you know, or quadruple cores or whatever look pretty good. So that's my plan, but I'll deny it. So. Other questions? Yeah, that was hard to do, you know. All of the traffic noise you heard, this is actually a very quiet part of town, and all of that traffic noise was I did all that. Yeah. That's right, you see? You saw him push the button, didn't you? Yes, Rick. I haven't found one in terms of how much can play. Now, you know, I've had, like I said, I had that one cue sequence that was 136 cues in a minute and a half, but it was only a minute and a half. And of those, maybe probably no more than 20 were playing at a time. But those are mostly stereo files. So it depends a lot on your processor and probably... I've never pushed it to the point where it won't, where it wouldn't do it. Well, I have, but it was on a 486 system a few years ago, and it was low on memory. So I had a system that only had 256 megs of RAM, and it brought down to its knees, I think, with about 20 tracks. This one that's running now is a 2.4 gig Pentium 4. With I think only 1 gigabyte of RAM, and all of these cues are running off the internal hard drive. Although I built all of this running off of the USB drive and didn't have any problem with running it off USB 2 drive running off of that. So certainly it hasn't gotten to the point where I couldn't run the or I wasn't able to run the or run a sequence I wanted to run. So, yeah. Exactly, it's a WAV file on the hard drive.
So you have a file called WAV.
I do, and there you go. So you can see, it's actually I've built a folder for this, and folder structure becomes pretty important, well, as any of you who use computer for audio know. So I'll build a folder for a show, and then locate all the files in that show, and then go down under that for all the different scenes and acts and things like that, or and often types of cues, because I'll have, you know, maybe 50 footstep cues and to choose from, so that when I'm in that rehearsal space and the director says that's not quite right, I can pull up another one really quick and say, okay, how about this one? You know, I keep those ducks, by the way, the duck cue, that's one that I always have on every system, so that I can, if I have a good enough working relationship with the director, I always like to do in a show. They probably all know it now, but I like to sit them down and say, "I have this fabulous idea for the entrance of so and so. You know, I really want you to listen to it. Just listen to it and give it a try. You know." And then everybody's in on it except for the director, and then we'll play a duck quack. You know? And for a few minutes, you know, you get that look. You know, it's like, oh my God, is he serious? You know? So yeah, it's all built on the computer disk. Now this software can also fire the computer CD player, so I can put a CD in the CD player and it will fire the CD player. It also has links to allow it to fire, to send a start cue to a PowerPoint show, or it can play video sequences. It can play MIDI cues. So it can do quite a lot of stuff. We've been controlling the soundboard with it, to show you, let's go to click back on SFX, and I'll show real quick. Go to cue sheet. That A cue sheet, A cues, yeah. And let's find a complicated one. Slide down to one that gives us. You know what? It's in this one. I want the one. It's in the B cue sheet. I want the one that is the 17 to 24. There we go. No, I didn't want to go. Because that's already there, but right-click on it so we can look at the cue. So this is a MIDI cue. This is an example of a MIDI cue. And what I've done is I've taken the control change. Click on one of those so that you'll see that this is actually a control change, not a note on and off. So this, in this case, MIDI channel 1, MIDI data number 80 at 127. In this one, that's a channel 17 on. I only know that because I've been programming this thing for the last several days. But if I go down to the next one, slide down to the next number, channel 81 on, so on. If I went to zero on the MIDI velocity, it would turn the channel off. So that's just like I can use that as a mute control. Slide down a little further until you get down to. About there. Now, MIDI channel 1, MIDI data 20, 102, and what's the next one down is MIDI data 1, MIDI channel 1, data 52, 127. Those two codes together give me an expanded resolution MIDI control over the level on fader 17. And those two happen to equate to 0 dB. So setting that at 0 dB, I find a different set of numbers that will set that lever at a different level. So I can use this to set up all those channels. And the reason there's so many of them is I'm doing channel 17 to 24 at the same time in one cue. So I hit that one cue, they all go on, and they all set at that level. Another way that I have used this, and I was having a little trouble remembering how to do it tonight, so I'm not going to try to demo it for you. But it really does work if I have 5 minutes to put my head together and think about it. I can use a program. I use a program called Anvil Studio, which is a freeware MIDI utility, and I can put it in record mode, and then go over and take a fader and fade it up to the level I want at the speed I want it to go up, and then save that recorded sequence as a MIDI file, and play that MIDI file from SFX, and as long as I route it to the right MIDI channel, that move that I did physically will be reproduced. So I can use that instead of just, we often use that for setting a starting level on a song, on a music piece, so that we don't have to just do mute on and off or pop the thing up to level. We can get a fade up to level, and then it lets go and the operator can control it from there, but it gives us the same starting level for the cue each time, which is really handy. And I can also use that. When I did that telephone thing back there, so I hit that guy. Okay, so what I did here, we still got that playing in the background. What I did here was I applied on the mixer, let's take this over so we can show them. Go away. Okay, so here is the mixer application that's running on the thing, and it's SFX is not actually talking to this. This is just the studio control studio manager for ONV96. So now let's go back to here again, and we'll go restore mixer, and we're back now to where we were. If we go back to studio manager, you'll see those EQs and everything have been cleared from there. And what that was is I'm just using the internal scene memories in the Yamaha, and I build a scene memory that sets the board up the way I want it to do with the EQ and levels. I send a program change instead of a control change, and the codes will tell me from 0 to 99 will give me the 100 scenes that I can store in the Yamaha. If I need more than 100 of them, I can save that file down to the PC and change it to intermission, reload the Yamaha at intermission. I like this board a lot. It's a real handy board for small level theater like this. Good friend of mine, Richard Ingram, who works in the East Coast, often uses them in multiples. So he'll run two of them. He'll use one of them for orchestra, one of them for vocals, one of them for effects, maybe run three of them together, control them all by MIDI from SFX, then the operator, he can have, if one of them winds up, the effects one winds up being pretty much static throughout the whole show, the operator just has to control the orchestra and the vocal, and in fact, they spend 99% of their time controlling, other than mutes, controlling the vocal. So, yeah. Anything that will hear MIDI and respond to MIDI will work with the software. Control change, program change, note on off, a velocity, anything like that that you can control with that, you can control with the software. Different ones are better. The original ONV, the faders chatter and they're not as clean as this. The ONV96, I think this is the V2, was the first one that I tumbled on that I could pick up, and it's quite reasonable. I think $2,100 for this mixer. $320 bought me 8 additional output channels at $24.96. Which is what I want. You know, in theater, we're odd. We don't want input channels. We want output channels. 16 input channels is just fine for me for analog. But I need as many output channels as I can get to do this. So, what time is it getting to be? Oh, my goodness, it's 10:14. We should maybe take one more question and then wrap up, do you think? If only we had another question. Yeah.
It looks like the software could probably run without the mixer.
Yes.
If you had a good sound card that had enough output,
absolutely.
You could run right to amps. And
absolutely. And I've done that on shows. In fact, the most recent show we did, the Beggar's Opera piece that we did over at Broadway Performance Hall, just struck a week or so ago. We had 14 outs of this on this board that we could use, that we could assign to speakers, and the designer had designed 15 channels of speakers. So we took one channel directly out of the Echo and ran right to the EQ and amp for the channel. That works just fine. And I've run shows without the mixer. I still put a mixer in every show just because I have this fear of not being able to grab something and pull a level down if I need to. On this board? On the SFX? Yeah, the escape button. The escape button will stop everything in its tracks. There's also a pause that allows you to pause and stop a cue in process and then pick it back up. Now, if you're doing a very complicated sequence of cues like that, it will stop and it will pause and pick back up at that point, but it won't let you back up easily. Version 6, one of the sexiest new things in version 6 is that it will. So in version 6, if I have a string of 20 waits and fades and things happening, and I'm in the middle of it, and the director says hold, you know, now could we back up just a little bit so we can start this over again? You know, and the answer often now is, I got to play it from the start so I can get through all of these cues to get to this point. Now I just grab a fader and I pull it back, and it pulls all the audio back and all the weights back and everything back to a starting point, which is what it should have been able to do at the beginning. But their new engine is able to do that; the old engine wasn't. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, are you talking about the software or the software? Well, it's all done by faders on the mix. Yeah. There isn't on this. There probably will be on the new version. It's just a matter of a plug-in. And there are some plug-ins that'll do that. There's some plug-ins that'll give you that kind of control. But no, I mean, I would love to have that ability to just build that path in, you know, or even build it in graphically. And in the beta process, I've been giving them all kinds of ideas that make their heads explode. My fantasy is that I have this software set up so that I can come into a theater, and I can just tell the software that speaker A is 36 feet here, it's 20 feet in the air, it's this much distance from the back, and the audience path is here. And have it know how to calculate all of the delays and everything that I need so that I can make it do what I want to do. And so that I can take a show that I built someplace else and bring it into this new thing and just tell it, here's the changes. And then it should be able to translate and make my cue sound the same in that space. And they think it can be done, but you know, not without exploding their heads several more times before they. So I don't expect it for another few versions. So anyway, yeah. There is on the mixer does have a surround module. So and you can control the surround module by MIDI. So I could do it by doing that, but I would still be down to code. You know, I'd still be down to doing MIDI code. And those MIDI cues can be, I can look at them in hex if I want to, if I want to explode my head. I can look at them in hex and work them all out by hex as opposed to hexadecimal, as opposed to doing them by program change and control change and all of that. But I don't go there very often. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jake.
Yes, yes, thank you.